and welcome to a new episode of the Bleeding Metal Podcast. I am Kiki, your co-host. My pronouns are she, her, and I am here with...
Pia, my pronouns are she, her.
And today we have the first of the episodes that were recorded live at Tuska Festival in Helsinki this past summer. And, this past month, this 2 weeks ago. It seems so far away already. We're recording this on July 18th. We're going to talk a little bit about the interview that I had with Alyssa White-Gluz about art meets activism. And Pia, what did you think about it?
I found very interesting that I would sum up what she described. Every act is activism or can be activism when you act consciously.
Oh, yeah. That's a really nice takeaway. That's something to think about. Yes. And now, please listen to the live recording. And afterwards, Pia and I will discuss it. Hello, everyone. And welcome to Tuska Forum by Bleeding Metal. I'm your host. My name is Kiki. My pronouns are she, her. And I'm here with a very special guest today in my... I have a little introduction prepared if you don't mind.
See what you got.
In my over 10 years as a metal journalist, I've interviewed many fellow women in metal, but this is my very first time meeting this artist. The theme of the forum is Young Voices in Metal. A young but already very well-known voice in metal, please welcome the queen beast herself, Alyssa White-Gluz.
Thank you. Thank you for saying young.
I usually ask my guests in the podcast to introduce themselves, but we already did a little. Would you mind introducing yourself in terms of your activism? Is that part of your identity?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I am an activist before I'm a musician even. You know, that's really what drives me forward every single day, is hoping that in some way my existence on this planet can make it a little bit better for everybody else who is currently existing on the planet and who will exist in the future. So, and that's first and foremost animal rights.
Yeah. Would you describe that as your purpose in life then even?
I mean, I don't know if people have like a purpose in life. I think it's nice to think that we do. I don't really know if we actually do. I think someone's purpose in life can just be whatever they attach themselves to, you know, whatever drives them forward. It doesn't have to be some big grandiose thing. But with that definition, then yes, I would say that it's my purpose.
Yeah. Right. And what does it entail? What does your activism comprise?
Yeah, so for me, I mean, I don't look at it as a job or something that I can really detail out, because if I did, I would do that and not this. So it's really just deep down inside, I love animals. I think it's amazing that we share this planet with so many different uncountable species in the sky, in the water, on land, these amazing creatures. You know, they look different than us. They have different abilities than us. I mean, just... a fish can just live underwater. We would drown. You know what I mean? Like, just even simple things like this. A bird just flies. They just jump off a building and then fly. You know, like I still have this childlike awe over animals that can do this. And I think it's so sad that we have built an industry that doesn't care about that and actually only cares about profiting off of exploiting animals. And so, as much as possible, I like to just show people that you don't have to take part in those industries. You can actually still have all the things that you want to have in life, everything that you like, your food, your makeup, your whatever. Like, you can still have all those things without involving animals at all. And now, actually, I've been more and more involved in the tech space when it comes to this. So there's some really cool innovations happening in the tech space when it comes to the future of food, and also just reducing animal testing.
That's incredible. Those are very important things that people should be aware of. And to make people aware of, if we can get the next slide, you just recently partnered with Beta, and you just mentioned fish, right? And going along with that, I don't think we have enough time to listen to it, but you also made a cover.
Oh, yeah.
With Punk Rock Factory as a cover of The Little Mermaid, which is amazing. So give that a listen. And with this partnership for this specific project, you became the mermaid. What have been other experiences as an activist? You've been to protests as well. What are the experiences that you remember the most?
Yeah, I mean, I've hosted an animal rights march. I've spoken at multiple marches in multiple different countries. I've been to tons of protests. In this particular case with PETA, I actually wanted to highlight something that I think is usually ignored. And I also know that PETA is a very inflammatory word. Like, a lot of people are like, I love animals, but I hate PETA. And they think that it's some weird Illuminati group. Like, and they're like, oh, she's a member of PETA. And like, I'm not a member of anything. I don't know what that would entail. I know a few people that work at PETA because I've worked with them on things like this. And they're normal people like you and me. And so basically I had this idea that, and actually when I thought of this, it was because I went to a conference for the future of food, and we were identifying how effective the campaign to ban plastic straws was. So everybody pictures a sea turtle with a straw stuck in its face, and they cry and they hate straws. And then they go to the restaurant and they say, I'm going to take that drink without a straw. And they feel like they did their good deed for the day. That's great. Avoid the straws. Perfect. Single-use plastics, we don't like that. That's good. But I was wondering, why is it that we're ignoring the fact that most of the pollution in the ocean is not straws, it's ghost nets. It's nets from the fishing industry that are left behind. Those are killing the sea turtles, the whales, the dolphins, the porpoises, the manatees. That's what's killing the animals. It's not just the straws. And for some reason, people don't care about that. And so I wanted to try to create an image that would actually evoke this idea, and I wanted to kind of play into being a part of their world, you know. So I was a part of their world, stuck in that net with everyone else. And I also just wanted to create an image that would just capture attention, because if there's one thing that I've realized with activism, it's play into your strengths. If you're like really down with, you know, putting on a balaclava and go breaking open cages and emptying a fur farm that way, honestly, I'm all about it. I wish I could do that. But if you're someone like me, where maybe you have a reach, maybe that's my strength, you know, and maybe I can use that to actually draw attention to some issues. And so whether or not people thought about ghost nets or even agree with it, I also wanted to create just a beautiful image.
It is very, very beautiful, absolutely. And do you think, or do you use this message as well in the music? Do you incorporate that part of yourself in your music as well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't write only about that. I like to write about lots of different things. And also when I write songs, I usually have like a veil of abstraction over the subject at hand. But there's some songs where it pops through a little bit more, like The Race or Exiled from Earth.
As you were just saying, the platform that you have, the stage that you have, gives you that strength. It gives you the influence. Do you think metalheads are more receptive to this kind of issues and topics that are more socially and politically relevant even?
Yeah, I mean, I think like we're all metalheads in the room, right? Everyone here's a metalhead. So so I think it's actually maybe a misconception that metalheads are dumb, aggressive, just drink beer all day and party. Like, that is a misconception. Well, okay, maybe sometimes, but but I think it's a misconception actually. And actually, there's been studies done, and I wish I knew it off the top of my head so I could give you an exact reference, but there was a study done where they exposed newborns to different styles of music, and then they followed them for, I think, 10 years and did various tests to check how they were developing in terms of their intellect. And the smartest ones were those who listened to classical music and metal. And I gotta say, I can see why, because I really think metal is a subculture, it's a counterculture. We're all rebelling against something. We've all had something that made us want to rebel at some point. We're all here standing for what we believe in. We walk down the street, like what other kind of music Can you walk down the street and just look at someone and know that you know the same bands? You know what I mean? Or you know the same music. Like, we can identify each other in a crowd, in the airport, anywhere. We can see where the other metalheads are. And so I think that actually metalheads are a very, very strong community. And we've always been about rebelling against the system, always been about carving your own path. And the biggest industry on the planet right now is animal agriculture. And the most normal thing you can do is just go ahead and eat what they're telling you to eat. And so I think that being vegan or eating a plant-based meal now and then, or reducing your carbon footprint, or just actually taking that upon yourself to be different in that same way that you're being different in every other aspect of your life, if you can do that, then you're already being an activist as well. And so I really do think that metalheads are very open to this. And you can see that with, I mean, Creator, Mille's vegan, Gojira vegans, I'm vegan, there's Halloween as a vegan, there's vegans in almost all your favorite bands. And so I really think that as much as there might be vocabulary out there meant to turn people against each other, and I hate vegans, I eat this, I eat that, at the end of the day, we're all human and we're all doing our best, and that's all anyone can ask of us.
Exactly. That is a very good point. I think there's also this misconception about vegan people being very preachy and prejudiced. And so I think that is the most important thing to keep in mind, that we are all trying our best. And if we care for the planet and start doing the small changes, we're already putting our little grain of sand. Do you have any specific pieces of advice or tips for people to start making those changes in their lifestyle?
Yeah. I mean, I'm aware that not everybody cares. Like, not everybody cares about the planet. Not everybody cares about animals. Not everybody cares about their own health. Look at how many people smoke cigarettes. Like, it's just not a universal truth for everybody that everybody cares about the same things. But there's lots of different reasons to make little improvements in your life. You know, maybe it is animals. Maybe it is your health. Maybe you had a health scare. Maybe someone in your family had a health scare. Maybe you really love the planet and you want to have it still exist and still be a sustainable place for your kids or your grandkids. You know, there's all sorts of reasons to want to make these changes. And I think my biggest piece of advice would be find your why, find out what that why is, because if you have a reason, you're going to stick to it and you're going to want to make these changes, and it'll actually be fun to do that, because it is actually fun to do that. But if you don't have a reason, then you're just going to be like, well, why is everyone telling me to do this? I don't get it. And nobody wants to be told what to do. So, I would say that don't take somebody else's actions as an attack on you or as instructions for what you have to do. You can do your own way. You can do it your own way. You can do your own thing. And as long as you have that reason anchoring you, then you're gonna have fun with it. And it'll be natural, too.
And you're going to have the motivation to keep going and not to make it just a one-time thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing too. Like, I've been vegan for probably 25 years and I was vegetarian my whole life before that. And like, I don't think about it. Like, honestly, I only talk about it when people ask me about it like this, because it's just so normal for me. It's as normal as waking up in the morning. Like, I don't even think about it. It's not a struggle. It's not something I have to like work hard at. And my friends who are like more recently vegan who I've spoken to, they said, yeah, maybe at first, like the first 3 to 6 months, it was like a learning curve. And then after that, it just became second nature.
That's good news for all of us who want to be a little better. Now, going a little bit away from the activism and towards your voice, your artistry, your being as a musician, we are seeing a rise in female harsh vocalists. And not to say that it wasn't there before, because there were. It's very important to know that women have always been a part of the metal community. We just haven't been as visible. And what would you advise young women in metal? How can they empower themselves?
Honestly, it's tough because, you know, when you're 18 years old, you think you know everything. And when you're 23 years old, you think you know everything. But then you're 27 years old, and then you know everything. But then you're 30 years old, and then you really know everything. And then you're 33 and, oh shit, you didn't know that before. And the thing is, as you grow up, you can look back at your younger self and be like, man, I didn't know fuck all at that point. So I don't know if we're allowed to swear, but yeah, you can bleep it out. But yeah, so as you grow older, you kind of develop in different ways. I've noticed for myself, you know, confidence has taken on a new kind of format. Being able to read other people, being able to tolerate stressful situations. Like, these are all things that you sort of acquire with experience and age. And I guess those are some of the building blocks of what we would call character. And so I think my best piece of advice for someone starting out would be, know who you are and remember who you are and be who you are. Because I've had a ton of people tell me, like, why do you look like that? Why is your hair blue? Why do you sing like that? Why do you dress like that? You look too young. You look too cute. You look too big, too small, too old, whatever. Like, I've had a ton of people in the industry and outside of the industry telling me this, thinking they were giving me good advice. And yeah, I could have thrown on some cargo pants and combat boots and a t-shirt and been one of the dudes like they wanted me to, but that wasn't me. I don't like that. I like being colorful and expressing myself and being weird. And I've always been like that. So I've always made my own clothes. I've always been interested in just, I don't know what the style is called. It's just, that's what I like. And I know if I like something and I know if I don't. And so I just pushed through and I was like, well, this is how I want to present myself and I'm going to do that. And that has actually solidified a confidence in me, because I never had to pretend to be someone else. And you can only be the best version of you, because if you try to be someone else, you're just going to be the second best version. So be the best version of you. That's my advice.
Thank you. That's amazing. Okay, yeah. Thank you so very much for taking the time to be with us today, and have an amazing gig tonight.
Yeah, it's coming up soon, actually.
Exactly. All right, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So maybe you can, first of all, describe the situation. Have there been many people watching, and how was it to meet Elissa? You said in the beginning that it was your first interview with her.
Well, our little venue had a capacity of 120, 130 people. And I would say there were definitely about 100, at least. I don't have a specific count, but this was the fullest session. Everybody wanted to be there. and Elissa came in while the crowd was also going in. So we didn't have this moment of, you know, she comes in from behind the curtain or something. Mm-hmm. I actually asked her if she wanted to do that, but right that second, the people started coming in. The doors had already been opened, so we didn't get that chance. We only had 20 minutes, including that part. So that's why it's so short. And I wanted it to be very impactful. And I wanted to help her tell her story in the most impactful and clear kind of way. Mm-hmm. I was extremely nervous. My impression of her was this very strong, very powerful figure. And it was a little bit intimidating. But in preparation for the interview, I also watched several other interviews of her. And she is very friendly and very, very nice. So at first, when she first arrived and I said hello, she was also very polite, but she was still like very reserved. I think we mentioned this in the past episode where we talked about the whole festival. This was the first festival day. It was on Friday. They had just arrived. Her gig was in an hour and a half or almost 2 hours. So she was, I guess, also under a lot of pressure, under, you know, stress. And she told me that she had no idea what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. That she was there, but she hadn't been informed exactly what was happening, exactly what we were doing. I had to bring it down to the 2 seconds. And I told her, okay, we're going to have an interview, just you and me, but it's going to be in front of this live audience and it's going to be recorded for the Bleeding Metal podcast. And we're going to talk about your activism, if that's okay. And then she was like, she relaxed like completely and automatically. And she was very approachable, very, yeah, still very friendly, but in a less polite way. It was this more, okay, now we can chill. now that I know what's happening, we can chill and we can just have this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was very nice. And I was very nervous, yeah.
I can imagine. And it also shows how professional she is because, as you said, you only had a couple of minutes. I think the interview is 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
And you had to put all these info together in this 15 minutes with only a few questions. And what she could have done is that she talked right away 15 minutes and that would have been the interview. But mm-hmm. But she managed to shorten her answers to a point where you were able to also ask another question. And in the end, you even talked about harsh vocals, women mm-hmm. harsh vocals in metal. So yeah, that's very impressive. But I also think that she was able to relax because she's so deeply in this topic of activism. It's a part of herself. It's like when anybody would ask me, oh, can you talk about melodic death metal in 2 minutes? Then I would say, yeah, sure, no problem.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
There were so many topics that I wanted to talk to her about. Of course, if we had had the time, I would have asked her all the questions. But this was a back-to-back session. Right after her came Sami Albana from Lost Society, and we were talking about mental health with him. So I also had a question, like, in case we had time to spare, I would also ask her something about how she takes care of her mental health so that we would have a nice segue to the next session. And otherwise, I would have liked to go a little more into detail into some of her statements. But yeah, we didn't really have the time. And as you were saying, this topic is just her second nature, maybe even her first, as she said right in the beginning of the interview. And it was very important to me that she gets to make those points clear.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was my very first time meeting her. From that scene, I guess, she was one of the few women in metal whom we hadn't interviewed yet. Like, we've had mm-hmm. Flor Jansen, we've had Simone Simmons, we've had Sharon De Nadel.
Anneke van Triersbergen.
We've had Anneke van Triersbergen. We've had like all these big names, but Alyssa hadn't been one of those. And so, yeah, that's why I had this introduction prepared and I still wanted to do it. And and yeah, and she was super nice and reactive to it. And And then we dove right into the topic. Her presence was calming to me mm-hmm. because she took the time to, you know, just breathe and talk, you know, at a very comfortable speed, because when I get nervous I tend to rush a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, okay, this is how I feel. I felt a little bit of my own beliefs, even spiritually, I would say, reflected in her statements of her being an activist first and a musician second.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I can relate to that. And also what she said, that it didn't take her long to also adapt veganism.
Mm-hmm.
So that for her, it was like 6 months and then it was so normal to her. And a couple of years ago, I changed my eating habits towards paleo diet.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was the same. Like, in the beginning, you have to check food everywhere. But then you get used to that and you know, well, I will always have the option to have whatever, a soup or I don't know. You will always find something somewhere. And I'm pretty sure it's the same with veganism, that, well, you can just have the fries or I don't know.
The side salad.
you get used to that and that just becomes what you act like in your whole life. So it might sound complicated in the beginning, but you're getting used to that very quickly.
I was also thinking about that when I started also, because of the planet, etc., changing my ways of shopping, clothes and makeup especially, and food as well. Yeah, in the beginning, it was a lot of looking at the labels, what ingredients are in here, what do I want to put on my skin? But then after years of that, you don't even think about it anymore. I know what I usually buy. I usually get the same things. I make my own. I don't make as much. I only make my own skincare, like body butter anymore. But I know where to get the ingredients for that. I know what I use. I know how to travel with those. And there are a lot more products coming out that that want to adapt to those lifestyles.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's a lot more vegan options at most restaurants. There's a lot more vegan and natural cosmetics, also
cruelty-free,
with less plastic packaging.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, in the beginning, you just have to look a little further and look for those alternatives. And once you find them, they just, you know, they can just become your standard and your favorite. And then you don't look at it anymore and you can forget about making those extra efforts. Adapting is what takes that effort of changing a little bit. But yeah, you get used to it. The beautiful thing about humans, we are very adaptable.
Mm-hmm.
And once we adapt, we can continue evolving.
Yes. And I also like that she was so relaxed about her activism, that she made it about herself and not about influencing others by being a kind of role model, but not forcing it on somebody else. So she still called that activism, and I found that very refreshing, because when we think about activism, we think about demonstrations and people
protest,
sometimes in very, very extreme ways. And that is just, for me, it's the best way. If you just live your life like you think you want to do that because you have aims like saving the planet, saving animals, and then maybe inspiring other people, or if you do not inspire them, then to be able to just say, yeah, that's how I do it. You can do it however you want. And I won't judge you up to a specific point.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't go out there yourself and randomly kill or punch animals, then and I found that a very good way to spread the word for her activism.
Yes, that was very, very cool. As you said, refreshing, because I was also, I guess I had this expectation a little bit. I thought she would be a little angrier about it. And yeah, I said it in the interview with her as well. We have this preconception of vegan activists being this very preachy, very judgmental people who will curse you and your family if they see you wearing leather or eating meat. And that's not how she was, at least, which I found very nice. But also, it's not how you change the world, or not how you change people's minds. Because the more resistant we become, the more people resist us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we won't convince anybody. I think it's a very important conclusion that we're all doing our best. And her point was also very valid. Not everybody cares.
Mm-hmm.
People have other priorities. People have other goals. And not everybody cares about the environment, about animal rights, about their own, as Alyssa said, about their own health, their own bodies. A lot of people just care about money, for example.
Yeah. Priorities is a very important point here, because my priorities changed a lot when I became a mother. That had different reasons. One of them was, of course, that I had less time to do all this, to inform myself about things. And sometimes I was just tired and I was like, oh, I just don't want to think about what I'm going to eat. I just have some food and that's it. But also when I was pregnant, I prioritized the health of my child above being or about my eating habits, I was like, okay, it's healthy for my child if I eat fish twice a week. So I did that. So that's a very important point, that you have different priorities and different reasons for acting in a specific way. And none of them should be judged before having a conversation about it. And I think she was very open to conversations and not like, I want to force my opinion on you. And if we don't go out here with you having my opinion, we're not friends anymore. So yeah, again, I found that very relaxing of her.
Indeed. That was very nice. Before we go towards a topic that I want to dive into a little more, I think the biggest takeaways in like a personal growth kind of way, where what we just said, first of all, we're all doing our best. Even those people who I just mentioned who go through life, let's say blindly and just care about money, they are also just doing our best, and they will have the reasons not to care about other things, right? Mm-hmm. There are less privileged people who, yeah, do only care about where their next paycheck is coming from because that's the situation they are. And there's a lot of people living in poverty on this planet, and they don't have the means nor the headspace to care about where their food is coming from and who is suffering for their cheap clothes. That's all they can afford.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So we are all doing our best. We all have different priorities and life experiences and privileges and situations. And the third thing is those, our priorities, our values even, can change over time. Mm-hmm. And that is perfectly fine. We can change our opinions. We can change our mindsets. We can change. Yeah, we can adapt. And that is a good thing, because we can, if that is our priority, we can keep growing. We can keep learning. We can admit to a mistake that we did when judging another person, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment you meet them, like it was the case this time for me, you end up completely adoring them. All of those things can change. And that is, I think, our strength. And you should use that superpower for good.
Yes, I have a beautiful quote about that. I don't know where it comes from, but it goes like, if you're not able to change your opinion, you're not able to change anything.
Wow.
So that's very, very important for life, that you also allow yourself to change what you think about a person or a topic or whatever.
Yeah. And for some reason, when I talk about that, about being allowed to change, this is a little bit of a completely off topic here, but when I think about being allowed to change your opinion and to change your mind, I always think about consent, right? Even if you flirted with a person all night, you are always allowed to change your mind and not have sex with them, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine, right? Nobody is entitled to anything, even when they think it's approaching. I don't know.
Even in the middle of the act, you can say, oh, well, no.
Yeah, exactly. This is no longer okay. I changed my mind. Bye.
Yeah.
But going back to activism, and I mean, for me, this is my activism. And activism is very personal. And we've talked about this before on the podcast. Feminism is personal. Just like Alyssa Whiteclaw identifies as an animal rights activist, I consider myself an intersectional feminist activist.
Mm-hmm.
For me, or my priority, are the rights of women and LGBTQIA people from all ethnicities all over the world. And that's why what I advocate for. And so all of this is a very personal thing. You can design your activism however you want. And I do think, for me at least, it is important just to care about something. So do your activism however you want. Just care about something.
Yeah. And it also depends on the situation and where you're in, because sometimes it's just not safe to stand up for something.
True. Yeah.
For you personally. And if you are in a situation where you feel, where you don't feel safe about talking openly, then the people you might be talking to wouldn't change their minds even if you did. So priority number one is always safety. And mm-hmm. when the situation is safe for you, it's always good to speak up and to let people know that you have another point of view on things.
Yes.
For example, feminism and roles that women should play or should not play in our society and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that even has more impact when people see, oh, my coworker is a feminist. I only knew feminists from the media, but now I know someone in person.
Yeah.
And yeah, that always makes a bigger impact, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And what you were saying is very, very important. Safety first, that's the first priority, to take care of yourself and your well-being and your safety. But outing yourself can be a political act, because we increase visibility, we increase representation, we normalize things. And yeah, if we have the energy for that, we educate the people around us into knowing that every way of being is right. And as I was saying, today is July 18th, and apparently July 15th mm-hmm. was Non-Monogamy Visibility Day. So in terms of making outing ourselves as a political act, yeah, I identify as a polyamorous person. I am very interested in relationship anarchy as well. I try to practice that as much as I can. Google all those terms, get acquainted with all of those. Google is your friend. And yeah, all of that is also fine.
Yes. And I want to add that it's always good to think about that and to talk about that with your partner. Even when you know for yourself you want to have a monogamous relationship, or your partner knows that. And also to be open to talk about that again later, because my partner and I decided consciously to be in a monogamous relationship. And we also agreed on whenever one of us changes his or her mind, we are always open to talk about that and to maybe change that. And that is a very different basis for your relationship than when you never talk about that. And it also makes you feel more safe, because I know if my husband would be interested in another woman, he would just tell me.
Right.
And we could talk about that. And I'm pretty sure he wouldn't just do it and not tell me about that.
Right. We went on a completely very fun tangent here, but
we always do that.
And also all of that is part of my personal activism, at least, to make sure people know that there are choices.
Yeah.
Because when you know there are choices and you get informed, then you make conscious choices. Even if you decide not to change anything about your life, then at least you know, hey, the super traditional life I'm having or the super weird life I'm having is okay.
I
choose it every day.
Exactly. And sometimes the situation changes and that you live in, and that gives space for rethinking about that.
Yeah, true. And talking about choosing every day, now we come back to the topic, because I want to talk about the nets. Alyssa only mentioned them very briefly in our conversation at the Tuska Forum, but she mentioned having a conversation about how the banning plastic straws from the European Union was a very successful campaign as a, you know, ecological activist. And yeah, we saw for years that there were all these campaigns about straws in the seas, plastic straws in the seas hurting the turtles and the fish. And then we also saw other kinds of plastic trash in the sea hurting the fish. And the campaign where Alyssa participated and where she became a mermaid for this beautiful photo shooting, she was a mermaid trapped in a fishing net. And those are the ones that pollute our seas the most. And yeah, of course, it's really good not to have plastic straws and not to have any other type of plastic garbage in the seas, including masks. We went through a pandemic and we needed them to survive. Mm-hmm. But then they also landed in the sea. We have to, for me at least, it's very important to try to avoid using plastic. But in order to lessen the impact of those nets, we do have to be very conscious about our consumption of fish, about what kind of fish products we're buying, where those fish are caught, where the fish are fished. And something that really moved me to tears in the most horrifying way was watching Seaspiracy, the documentary. Mm-hmm. I really reduced my fish consumption a lot, and I realized how the fishing nets are just abandoned in the sea and left there to not only rot but cause just a lot of problems to our ecosystem. One thing that I felt very proud about, and I know it doesn't change a lot, but there are a lot of campaigns and companies trying to clean the sea off from those nets and mm-hmm. recycle these nets into and make them into something else.
I have a bracelet made of this net.
A bracelet?
Yeah.
My glasses. Hmm. My glasses, as in the ones that you need to see when I'm not using contacts. The frame of my glasses is made of those fishing nets.
Mm-hmm.
Of the plastic from those fishing nets. And that is, I think, a Chilean company named Karun. I'm going to link that in the description. They make frames for glasses and sunglasses out of fishing nets from down there, from the coasts of Chile.
Mm, that's great.
And they are really cool, too. They look very nice.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of initiatives in that way as well. But ultimately, the only way we can save our seas and our planet and ourselves, for that matter, is to really be conscious about, the fish we eat. And after that, the animal products that we eat as well.
Mm-hmm. I also think it's very important to support the companies who do something against the nets in the ocean, like the company that made your glass frame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also to inform ourselves about where does the fish come from that we eat and how was it fished, and do we really need to do that, or can we eat something else?
Yes, not only support the companies, but also the government
mm-hmm.
that and or the organizations like Sea Shepherd, for example. Sea Shepherd have an alliance with Parkway Drive. Sea Shepherd was a big part of the Seaspiracy documentary. They are kind of the police, the independent police from the seas. They fight illegal fishing and illegal just killing of marine life. So if you are able to donate to them or volunteer for them, mm-hmm. they are the real heroes, I think.
We have a German band from, I think, Würzburg. It's called Devil May Care. And they made a, I would call it, light version of the Seaspiracy documentary mm-hmm. as one of their music videos. I think the song is called Into the Abyss. And they also, at least for this one, cooperated with Sea Shepherds. And they sometimes before the concerts, they say, well, everybody who wants to join us, we are at the lake or at the river or whatever, and clean it together mm-hmm. with you if you want to join. So that's also very cool.
Nice. In terms of saving our planet, it's really a difficult balance to know where to place the responsibility ultimately. Do we place it on the individual, on our power as consumers and activists, or do we place it on the big structures like governments and corporations, right? Do we boycott specific corporations because they are harming the planet? Do we, how much can politicians change things so that the planet gets a chance at getting better. It's like, it's really difficult. And sometimes I feel so powerless, even though I'm doing all of these little things. I think just to be informed is already a lot. But yeah, I think it's a difficult thing too.
Yes, but it also gets easier, I guess, that you mentioned the politicians in your area. I recently saw, it was from the LGBTQ rights, that they had not a petition that you could sign, but it was very easy for you to put your name under a letter to a politician. Mm-hmm. And everything else was prepared. So you just had to look, okay, who's responsible in my area? I want to write this letter to that person, and this is my name. So that led to a lot of letters about this matter going to politicians. And that's an amazing thing. So maybe watch out for something like that when you want to change something and you know there are other people out there with the same idea.
Yeah, it's important to know how each of our governments work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can, you know, in the US you hear a lot of call your local representative and tell them you want this and this policy to be passed or whatever. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's going to vote. Sometimes it is starting petitions and collecting signatures. I think it's important to be politically active and at least voting.
Mm-hmm.
Voting for the people who put the planet and the ecosystem as a priority.
Yeah. And don't be ashamed to donate just a little money, like 2 euros or 5 euros. So if many people do that, it has a huge impact.
Yeah. That is true too. So yeah, there are many, many ways to be an activist if you want to. I do think that it's important to have something you care about in life and support the cause, wherever it is. That would be my ending statement. Care about something, damn it.
But as Alyssa also said in the interview, I think that our scene cares a bit more than the mainstream. I wouldn't say that the whole metal scene is full of activists, because I know a lot who are not. But in total, I would agree with her that that being a metalhead makes you maybe a bit more brave to also stand up for your opinion, because that's what you also do with your music, especially when you're wearing band shirt in public or whatever. So you are more visible, and you are maybe not so afraid of showing who you are and what you think.
And rebelling.
Yeah.
Yes. Raging against the machines. Okay. So care about something and go rage against the rest.
In a friendly way where it's possible.
Sure. Thanks everybody for listening. I hope you enjoyed our talk with Alyssa during Tuska Forum by Bleeding Metal. We have a few more of these live recordings coming up for you on the podcast feed. So give this podcast a follow or subscribe wherever you're listening. And yeah, stay tuned.
Yes. Thank you for listening, and bye-bye.